soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
So Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, rebote y el gol! ¡Gol de oro! ¡Gol de oro! ¡Gol de Oribe! ¡Gol!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to hour number two of Soccer Matters. Hey, I'd be remiss if I did not mention Bill Worrell, the great Rockets play-by-play man, really a big part of our Houston sports landscape for so many years. Bill Worrell was just honored at one of the Rockets games, and I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. I've gotten to know Bill over the years, a tremendous guy. Sat at him some events and did a few events together with the former Astros play-by-play man, Bill Brown. So a real congratulations to Bill Worrell, and what an outstanding career. And he's indelibly connected and etched with the Houston Rockets. And I like the way the Houston sports community and the Rockets have honored a guy that's been so important to that basketball team. And, you know, iconic calls on some of the great games, and not only that, just a friendly face for people who watch the games on television. All right, this segment here, we're going to call it Danish Dynamite, and we bring in from that wonderful furniture company. It's Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, danishinspirations.com. Get over there, get your stressless like I have. I'm fighting with my dog for that stressless at night to watch TV, but Jan Christensen has the best in modern contemporary furniture at his place. He's been doing it for many, many years. He's been doing it in support of Soccer Matters for many years. He joins us now. Jan, how are you?
Great, Glenn. Great to hear you honor Bill Worrell. I was actually at the game when he got honored, and it was wonderful to see. Great man. Great man.
Yeah, he's
his enthusiasm, and similar to yours when it comes to soccer.
Yeah, he's super. Bill Worrell, and I'm glad you brought that up. But I want to take you right into, because we only have a quick couple of few minutes here with you on Danish Dynamite, and I want to take you in. You've been keeping us up on the Christian Eriksen story. Tell us where he is, and exactly. Is he going to come back and play?
Yeah, you know, as you know, June 10th last year, it's forever etched in the Danish soccer people's mind, and it was his first official interview last week. And the first thing he said was, I want to play for Denmark in Qatar. And that, of course, means that he's going to have to get back on his boots because, you know, after the collapse, he actually said in the interview, he said, I'll never play again. He said that to his wife. He don't want to play anymore. But, of course, when things settled down, and we have now known for several months in Denmark that Christian was practicing alone with a couple of trainers, really hard and tested by doctors after that. You know, as you know, he has the heart thing in his heart, and he cannot play in Italy with that. So he's been tested a lot, and there's supposedly no reason that he cannot play again at the highest level. But as you know, Glenn, you know, coming back after 7 months off on this level, and not only, you know, with the pressure that a professional soccer player has these days, but the attention that he'll get will be 10 times more than anybody else, you know. And, you know, so what happens the first time you get a hard elbow in the chest, you know? So all those things is question marks and question marks, you know, if you can get back to the previous level. And of course, his agent, as I have heard, is focusing very much on getting to a team that understands this and will slowly bring him in, you know, as a substitute in the beginning and then hopefully as a starter for next season. And so I heard that the club's agent is talking to is supposedly Ajax, Monaco, and Barcelona. Underneath that is also Tottenham, but I'm not sure how well he got along with Coach Conti in Inter. So there's a lot of work for this agent here to be done, and of course, a lot of work for Christian Eriksen. But I hear from people that he's extremely mentally strong, so handling that pressure and attention they think they say he can handle that, if anybody can. So
yeah, that's the thing I was thinking about. It's just the mental challenge when it comes back. Jan, just wrap it up here in 20 seconds and give us the Danish Dynamite cheer, please, before we let you go.
All right, man. It's we are red, we are white, we are Danish Dynamite. And come on into Danish Inspirations or go to danishinspiration.com, and we'll be there. All right,
Jan,
thank you for what you do for soccer. Yeah.
And Jan, thank you for coming on the show tonight and for being a great sponsor of this show. It's Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. It's on Fondren, danishinspirations.com. Go over there and peruse the website. You're going to find something you like, I guarantee it. All right, we are going to take a quick break. As we head to break, just a reminder here, we've got coming up an interview with Christian Ramirez of Aberdeen in Scotland. You remember now, he left the Dynamo. He's got a 2.5-year deal there. This is a really interesting interview with Christian Ramirez. And he's the second leading goal scorer. He's tied with two other players with 8 goals behind the leading goal scorer who's got 9 in the Scottish Premier League. He scored at Rangers. This is a really, really interesting interview. I think you're going to like this. You're going to realize what a professional attitude this young man has. Jason Longshore, who's down in Atlanta, soccer down here podcast, also a commentator for Atlanta United, will get us up to speed on what one of the top clubs in all of MLS is doing, just to give us some context on things. All right, we'll take a break here. FM Kitchen and Bar, you got 2 locations. You got the Montrose location. I went in there today about 4 o'clock. I was hungry. Ordered a hamburger over the phone. Went in there. Jason Mock was there, who runs the place. I went into the one that's north of Washington on Shepherd. Great burgers. I got the 8-ounce. And, so got some power food in, came back, worked on the rest of the show. FM Kitchen and Bar, great craft cocktails, chicken sandwiches, burgers, salads, healthy options as well. FM Kitchen and Bar. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Christian Ramirez, Aberdeen in Scotland, next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Di Marco. Visszakapja. Hoppá! Helyzet! Sánchez belövi a 121. percben. Rövid zárlat a Juventus védelmében, és eldönti a kupa sorsát Alexis Sánchez.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We continue on, and a lot going on in the world of soccer. So much to watch on TV as well, and I can't say enough about the African Cup of Nations, but it's been so much fun to watch. This next interview, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they're going to take your case. They'll work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. I think the big thing here is, and I try to remind all the listeners and all that hit up the podcasts, remember the sponsors that support your sport, whether it's on this show, whether it's an MLS team, regardless, support those sponsors that get your game on the air. All right, this is a good one right now. I'm excited to do this interview. Former Houston Dynamo striker, you know him from Major League Soccer. He's played for the U.S. Men's National Team. He's now at Aberdeen in Scotland. He's number 2 in the Golden Boot race in a 3-way tie. He's Christian Ramirez. Christian, thanks so much for coming on the show. I know it's late.
No, thanks for having me, Glenn.
I guess you got the kids to bed, right?
Definitely.
All right. So when I heard the time you wanted to do this and what would fit your schedule, I'm like, yeah, this man and his wife are getting his kids to sleep. So, well, let's get right into it. Just take us into the Scottish experience so far. I mentioned to everybody already, you're the number 2 goal scorer in the Scottish Premier League. What's it been like? What was the adjustment like?
It's been good. I sort of just got thrown into it. When I got here in July, it was straight into European football, which was such a cool experience. Like, never thought I'd be playing in a country like Azerbaijan, in Baku, playing in Iceland, playing in Sweden. So that was a cool moment for me personally to be able to play European football and score in European competitions, and just have that experience. And then league kicked off, and it seemed like we were playing every Thursday, every Sunday, and games were just piling up. And I went from not playing at all for the last year and a half to just throwing in, playing 90s back to back to back. And it was everything I wanted. And I've just been trying to soak in the culture of Scotland, and everything that comes with this experience.
Christian Ramirez joining us with Dundee. Tuesday, they will take on Rangers. And you had mentioned to me before we started the interview, fans will be back at full capacity. What's it like playing these legendary clubs, you know, like Rangers and Celtic? And I mentioned those two simply, and Aberdeen, simply because those are the ones that are probably most recognizable here in the States. But what's it like playing against Rangers and Celtic and going to their stadiums?
It's pretty cool. I mean, when we went to Ibrox the first time this season so far, we were actually up 2-0, and I scored the first goal, and playing in front of one of the most hostile environments across Europe, and seeing how silent it got at 2-0 was unreal. You had 1,000 traveling supporters of Aberdeen there. It's crazy. The atmosphere, you had Stevie G on the sideline managing for them. It was just a super cool experience. And then at Celtic Park, it was Scott Brown, our captain here, his first game back at Celtic Park after leaving after 10 years and winning 9 titles in a row. So seeing his reception that he got there was a humbling experience to see how much people value him in here in Scotland and at Celtic. So that's cool. But like you said, those are the two teams that everybody knows about. People don't realize how hostile of an atmosphere Tynecastle is for Hearts, or Easter Road for Hibs. Places like that are up there that they're tough, and it's been fun soaking in all that experience. And everywhere we go, we have 1,000 to 2,000 traveling supporters every weekend. So seeing that side of traveling supporters, because of the geography and how close everything is here, it makes for sometimes a home field advantage on the road. So it's been cool.
Christian Ramirez joining us. All right, so to set the record straight, the exit from Houston, this has obviously turned out to be a very, very good move in a variety of ways for you. First off, on the field as a professional, off the field, the differing experiences, the uniqueness of it, but you are still a professional footballer. How did this come about from Houston, and what is the real story? Did you ask Tab Ramos that you wanted? That's what I was understanding.
Yeah. Excuse me. So this opportunity, I had 6 months left on my deal with Houston and the MLS. And the way it was going the last year and a half, I clearly didn't fit what Tab wanted as a central striker. And that's fine. And I had numerous other opportunities to be moved on within the MLS that teams asked for me, or abroad in Liga MX, stuff like that weren't open to that because they said I was a big piece in the locker room, and I was needed, and I was a good pro, and I was getting paid well. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I would never cause any havoc in the dressing room or became a cancer like many people would hear stories about other pros that were in my situation doing that to get their way out. I just wasn't raised that way. So I continued to work. And I personally thought when I played my one game this year in Colorado, I scored and thought I played well. And any other time that I came on for the minute or 2 minutes at the end of a game, I did as much of running as I could to help the team in whatever aspect was needed. But it was bittersweet because I wanted to make Houston home, and I felt like I could make it work there, and I could be the first option there. And we showed glimpses of that when I first got traded there with Manotas and myself up top. And even the second year when I got a string of games and we started to win. But yeah, I mean, once this opportunity came and I spoke to Stephen Glass and Alan Russell about the project that they were presenting here, I had to go into Matt Jordan's office and tab and ask them, like, look, I've been a good pro for this last year and a half. I'm at a contract at the end of this year. I can go sign a pre-contract and come in January, realistically, or I can go sign a pre-contract with another team. But I'll Houston can get something for me now and let me go play European competition. This was essentially the last chance I had to play abroad in my eyes, because I just turned 30. And sometimes those opportunities don't come again, for somebody that just turned 30 and hadn't really played for a year and a half, plus the security of having a 2.5 year guaranteed deal, presented on the table. So with all those factors, I sort of went in and I asked, professionally, and, I think they respected that. Didn't really cause any drama. They asked me to keep quiet until things worked out. If they did, if not, just to continue working for the remainder of my deal. And the situation was, if I didn't make this move happen and I just took a bite of the bullet and just continue to play, I was going to have to take a one-year deal somewhere and try and prove myself in that aspect. So I said, hey, why not take this 2.5 year deal? And after it, we'll look back at these experiences with my family, and we're loving it so far. Short flight from everywhere around here. My oldest one has a Scottish accent already from her time at nursery. And so we're enjoying it, and hopefully we'll be back in the States eventually. But we're enjoying it right now. And like my wife tells me all the time, just live in the moment, and we'll figure out the future once that's time.
Fantastic. Christian Ramirez joining us. So just correct me if you don't think I'm right here, but it sounds as though Tab Ramos was very helpful in eliciting this move, I would say, and Jordan, right? Do you feel like you were treated properly? I would think so, because that's what Tab said.
Yeah, no, I felt like I got rewarded in the way that they helped me get this move done, because of how I acted this last year and a half.
Yeah.
The first day that Tab took the job in that preseason and a year and a half ago, where Mauro's deal to Spain fell through on transfer day, I knew from there on out that I wasn't going to play no matter what I did, unless Mauro got hurt. And that was the case. I mean, I was with Mauro and good friends with Mauro, and he's at the time the franchise's number 9. So you're not going to compete with that, and never was that my intention. My intention, and Mauro knew this, was to hope that we would play with two forwards up top, like Davey was playing when he had his 10 games.
I do remember you saying that you know, you were really hopeful that maybe Tab would go to two strikers. I mean, it sounds like it's all been handled professionally, but were you a bit of a victim of the system? Because look, players are victims to systems. Tab was trying to elicit a pressing game. Yeah. Do you feel that's a fair thing to bring up?
Yeah, essentially. You look at the criteria of the players that were playing in Tab's system, and I clearly am not the fastest player in the world. And you had guys like Fafa and Maxi and Ari. Albert was thriving in it. Mauro's pacey. You saw it in a sense, in a way, early on in the year, until Darwin took his place and showed what he could do when given an opportunity in the right place. Darwin fell a bit to the system that was transitioning. You saw how well Tyler Pasher was doing because of how well he is vertically, going at pace and going at people like that. So yeah, I think it was a case of that, and to no shame, I think Tab at the same time will tell you that I worked my butt off every day, and I was a good influence in the dressing room. And I think that relationship with him in that sense really helped once this opportunity happened. And he saw the confidence that Stephen Glass and Aberdeen had in bringing me, that he knew if I came here and played for a manager who wanted me in his system, I would do well. And thankfully, Stephen Glass is that manager for me right now, and I'm doing really well for him. And I'm just doing everything I can to repay Aberdeen and bringing me here and giving me this opportunity.
All right. In respect to you, let's switch this conversation from the Dynamo now, because that's some great insight there. But I really want this to be about you. And, you know, I what is the difference now in the football in Scotland to MLS, in your opinion? And you know, you got some very hardened old school type defenders. You know, there are some differences. What are they for you?
Well, there's no VAR yet. so
you can claim a lot of goals.
Yeah, something gets taken away off the ball and stuff like that. That or fouls that PKs that should be PKs that aren't called and stuff like that. But no, I think it's a real tactical battle, especially when you're going up against teams in the lower half of the table who are trying to just get a point off of you at your home. And they're sticking to their game plan the entire time, like madness. And it takes a bit and a bit of patience to break teams down, or also the weather at times. You're playing in crazy rain, or the fields. Like we were down at Perth at St. Johnson, and there, it was just fog and mist, and the field felt like it was just sand. So you really couldn't play proper football. So we just had to grind out a result and we got a win. So those are those games. And then you go into games at Ibrox, like we said earlier, Celtic Park, where you're the team trying to get a result. But Aberdeen prides itself on always trying to push for the top three. So we just go in there trying to get points, and, we were unlucky at Celtic Park, to lose 2-1, and then we thought we deserved 3 points at Ibrox when they got a late penalty kick when we were up. But yeah, it's been cool, that aspect. And MLS, everybody knows the level continues to grow, and the athleticism that presents in the league, and the quality of players. Even now, you're seeing this offseason how many big signings are starting to happen. So it's the leagues are just different, but yeah, I don't. There's numerous cases of guys coming from Scotland going over to MLS and not doing well, or from the MLS coming here and not doing well, and vice versa. So I don't really compare that aspect, but it's been a good test and a good culture shock for sure.
Christian Ramirez joining us. All right, so Ian Harkes is at Dundee. Dante Polvara is going to join you at Aberdeen. James Sands at Rangers. Chris Mueller from Orlando City at Hibs. Yeah. There's kind of a migration here. You might have been a little bit at the beginning.
Carter Vickers at Celtic.
Yeah. So what? I mean, obviously the appeal is history, great quality of play. You know, contracts. You're secure 2.5 years. That's a heck of a piece of security for you.
No, for sure. I think guys are being attracted to it because also it's. For younger guys, like, for example, Dante, who's coming over, it could be a huge stepping stone for him to get over to bigger and better things that he dreams about. So that was one thing that when I spoke to him, is he's always wanted to chase playing in Europe. And he felt like this opportunity here at Aberdeen would help him develop into possibly being sold or who knows, you know. It's because Aberdeen's becoming a staple for developing young talent. So, hey, he made his move, and I'm sure many more Americans are looking to move abroad. It's becoming a trend, and I think the world market's starting to go into America and fight the MLS for all the young American talent as well.
Christian Ramirez joining us. Christian, just wanted to get you into the fact that you guys have won 4 out of your last 5. I want to remind people that Tuesday you will take on Rangers. Stadium's going to be back at full capacity. How could people watch your games? Where's the best place to watch you on ESPN?
The Rangers one's on Sky. Okay. The every other game of ours that isn't on Sky, Aberdeen has a subscription. It's called on Red TV on Aberdeen's website. Actually, there's a couple places in Minnesota that I think it's Blackheart Bar, owned by Wes, one of the Minnesota supporters that I've known over the years. He actually got a subscription and has watch parties, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, Aberdeen has a subscription, a monthly subscription that gives access to all the games and different types of replays of games and stuff like that. Goes behind the scenes on certain things. So, yeah, it's a cool subscription to look into.
Have you ever had haggis yet? Do you know what that is?
Yeah, no, everybody asked me. I can't get myself to try it.
Yeah.
I just actually had there's one American barbecue place in Aberdeen. And I went in tonight with my family to try and compare it to Texas barbecue.
How did it go?
They did pretty good. I was genuinely impressed. Maybe it's because I haven't been in Texas for a while. But yeah, it was good.
So just to let people know who's listening, the thing that Christian doesn't want to eat, haggis is a Scottish dish. It's like lungs, heart, liver. It's all mixed with like onions and oatmeal, and then they do it in the stomach of the animal. They use the stomach lining and then put seasoning on it and boil it. So I saw a special on TV once about it. I'm not sure. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's not for me.
Well, if you had it one night and you scored a few goals, you might be eating it. So you never know.
Oh, man.
Don't underestimate the haggis. Christian, thank you so much for getting us up to speed on what you're doing. Congratulations. Hey, go win that Golden Boot Award in the Scottish Premier League. That would be unbelievable.
Thank you. Will do. Appreciate it.
All right. Christian Ramirez there joining us. We'll take a break. More rolls on here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Rodrigo. What can he do here? Pulls it back. It was an outrageous tummy by Vinicius Junior. Valverde managing to apply the finishing touch. And look at the celebration that follows from Real Madrid.
All right, final segment of the night brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle, drive an 18-wheeler, Daspit Law Firm. 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They're going to bring you a personalized approach, and they'll work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. Get the representation you need with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. All right, next interview, Jason Longshore, Atlanta United radio commentator. He's also a big part of the Soccer Down Here podcast. I like this guy a lot. Jason and I have become good acquaintances through our coverage of the sport. I thought it would be great to speak to Jason about one of the standard-bearing clubs in Major League Soccer in Atlanta United. Hope you enjoy this. Here's Jason Longshore. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
All right. So let's, I just want to quickly get a little synopsis of Atlanta, the market, since the big entry into Major League Soccer, all the success, only 1 year have missed the playoffs. But where the fan base is now, has it remained steady? Has it sustained? And has Arthur Blank and Atlanta United continued to pull all the right strings for the fan?
Yeah, I think so. I think what's interesting about Atlanta that has changed really since 2019 is the expectations have increased. And maybe at times a little unfairly, but that's the price of early success. You know, you're expected to be there every single year. And, you know, we've been around this league. We know how difficult it can be to just have back-to-back quality seasons, let alone go on runs like we have seen a few teams do. Atlanta's trying to do that. They had the 2020 year that was difficult on so many different fronts for Atlanta. You had the increased difficulty with the ACL injury to Joseph Martinez that derailed Frank DeBoer's plans early on, made it difficult for Steven Glass in the interim role to get momentum, couldn't get into the postseason. Bad start this year under Gabriel Heinze in 2021, but Gonzalo Pineda came in midseason, really turned the team around. They were one of the best teams in the league after he took over, one of the top four teams in MLS. They didn't have enough to get past the eventual champions NYC, but I feel like the team is in a good place going forward and the fan base is engaged. The fan base is very demanding. And that creates, I think, a dynamic here in Atlanta that honestly might be a little unique around the league. I'm not sure if the fan base is as demanding in some of the other bigger markets around the league as they are here. They're excited to have a team. They're excited about the culture around it. Whenever there's big announcements, you get that buzz going, but then it immediately turns back to where are the trophies? We want more.
Jason Longshore joining us here, Soccer Down Here podcast. I suggest you give him a follow and a listen. 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. All right. So you said a lot of great stuff right there. So you and I have talked a lot about healthy pressure in Major League Soccer. I'm going to be a little bit more blunt. Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't have what Atlanta has when it comes to healthy pressure. And of course, I assume the organization embraces that beautifully. They want that.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, if you want to be a top team, you know what's coming. Does it get frustrating at times when that pressure gets maybe a little unfair instead of being healthy? Absolutely. But that's what we all deal with in this industry, right? You know, if you're going to be one of the big kids, you know, at the table, you're going to be expected at times, even unfairly, when you have things like Joseph's injury. And as we learned this past year, you know, we didn't even know, at least I didn't, I'm sure internally there was knowledge of this, but I didn't know how bad that injury was with all of the follow-up procedures. And again, one in December of 2020 that really did have a big effect on his preparation for 2021. So he had double digit goals this year. You know, I think at times it feels like maybe the conversation around Joseph was, it was a lost season in 2021. He did go for double digits. He wasn't always the Joseph Martinez we know. And in this league, and honestly, really any league, when your top guy, your goal scorer is not himself or is injured, it's really difficult to overcome that. I think in MLS, it's even more difficult because of the salary cap structure. You just don't have that ready-made replacement. And Atlanta struggled with that. Now, you know, going into a year where you would expect he'll be as back to normal as he can be, I think that expectation ramps up even more, and the club's really embracing wanting to win all the trophies they can this season.
Jason Longshore joining us, Soccer Down Here podcast. Jason, exceptional work. Atlanta United's outdrawing many teams around the world when it comes to attendance. I've had the opportunity to call a national broadcast in there, and it's on a different stratosphere. I don't think there's any question. Okay, Joseph Martinez, I've seen a lot of talk from him, some interviews. I think Felipe Cardenas and The Athletic had something on him about how, you know, he was kind of told that it was going to take him a year to get himself back to really the sharpness. Do you feel like he's on the brink of that? Did you see that ascend a little bit of sharpness during the season last year?
Yeah, I did at times. It was really hard because of the compressed nature of the schedule, especially late, where, you know, if it had been a normal kind of schedule, one game a week, I think we would have seen a little bit more from him. But he played not at 100%. Down the stretch, as Atlanta's chasing a playoff spot as well. You know, it was quite a battle to get in because it went down to the wire. And he gave everything he had. And I think you see that on decision day, the goal that he scored that eventually won the match against Cincinnati and put Atlanta into the five spot in the postseason, he showed the quality that he has. And even when he wasn't 100%, he showed the, I think, positional gravity that he has. He pulls defenders to him. He opens up space. Now, it'll be 2 years away from the actual injury in the end of February as we get started for the 2022 season, and a little over 1 year away from the last follow-up procedure, which was December of 2020. I think knowing that now, it would have changed our expectations of 21, where that was definitely more of a recovery season than we would have expected. Now, coming into this season, I think it's the expectation of everything will be a full go. It's a much better schedule to manage this season. You don't have as many midweek games. That's going to help somebody who last season was just dealing with soreness. It wasn't injury, but it was soreness, playing those back-to-back games, playing Saturday or Sunday, and then turning around and playing on Wednesday, and then again on the weekend. That really took a lot out of him late down the season.
Jason Longshore joining us. All right, let's go back to Gonzalo Pineda. Liked him as a player always. I love this move from Atlanta United. You went away from, you know, the big name manager, which was maybe an expectation in Atlanta with DeBoer and Gabriel Heinze. And of course, Pineda is a big name in Mexican circles. Let's not deny that at all. But he comes from Seattle. He comes from an organization where he's obviously been groomed a bit with the environment and Brian Schmetzer. How has he done so far? And talk to me about what type of manager he is, because I think to a lot of people, we really don't know. He seems like a very under control type of guy.
Yeah, it was interesting when he came in because we didn't know. And when you get an assistant who takes over, you never know how much of that previous team's personality was the assistant's or how much they affected it. And Brian Schmetzer, you know, has a lot of control over that Seattle Sounders team. One of the big conversations that stuck with me as Gonzalo was announced here in Atlanta was that he is a guy who studies video. He studies the game. He's like us. He's kind of a nerd about it. And he was the one who really jumped into the idea.
You're calling me a nerd? Come on.
Hey, I'm a nerd, too.
We just love the game passionately.
Well, nerds are passionate. We'll take both.
Whatever. I'm good with all of it. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't take myself too seriously. I don't think you do either.
No. Gonzalo is like us. He lives and breathes for it. And he studies these things. He came up with the idea to play two up top last year, according to a lot of the reports, when you didn't have Jordan Morris and playing Will Bruin with Raul Ruiz Diaz really made a lot of sense for that Seattle team that went on a great run early. I think what we saw when he took over here was a team that had been trained in a very specific way for half of the season under Gabriel Heinze. It was all about positional play. It didn't always click. You didn't get the pressure up high that was needed to make it work under Heinze. I think you got that later on under Pineda. He did play three center backs almost exclusively. That was interesting. I didn't necessarily expect that. And I don't know if that's where he will go.
So let me take you back, because you just said something really important. Mm-hmm. They didn't get the pressure under Gabriel Heinze, but they then did under Pineda. Tell me why.
I wish I knew, because I had done a lot of the research coming in with Gabriel Heinze and studied his teams at Vélez and had a pretty good sense of what he was trying to accomplish. And he got the positional aspect of it. The team was very stretched out. They wanted to go, you know, touchline to touchline. They wanted to switch the play touchline to touchline. They attacked in the ways that I expected. It didn't really get past a little bit more of the patterns of play that I was hoping you'd get past more rehearsed stuff. That didn't happen. But the high pressure after turning the ball over never happened consistently. And I don't know why. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense, because that was a hallmark of Heinze's teams at Vélez. And the team had showed in the past, and the team showed later, that they could do that. I don't know where the disconnect was. And it felt like from on the field, and a lot of the issues, I think, with Heinze, as we've heard more after he was dismissed, you know, I think a lot of the issues were more off the field than on the training ground. But on the training ground, that's the one big disconnect that I think affected the team's results early on and never really made sense to me.
Let's talk about a couple of the areas of the club that I'm very interested in. And of course, I know the history of Atlanta soccer with, you know, Atlanta Chiefs, the Georgia Generals. It goes even farther back beyond that. Where's the club youth development wise? And just give me the Cliff Notes version.
I think it's in a really good place. They invested in a full academy a year before the MLS team started. And it wasn't like we've seen some teams do where it's start one team and then age up with every team as you go. It was full bore academy in the summer of 2016 before the first team got on the field. That's paid off. And I think you're seeing young players start to break through into this first team. George Campbell is another one to pay very close attention to as a center back who came through the academy. George Bello, an academy product who's getting national team minutes now and linked with moves to Europe. Mm-hmm. There's more coming. And I think Atlanta United too has been a big part of that. Stephen Glass, when he took over with Atlanta United too, he came from the U17s with the academy. When he went on to Aberdeen in Scotland, Jack Collison took over the twos. He came from the U17s with the academy. So you're getting those links. And with the twos, you're seeing some of the youngest teams in the USL Championship. That's a key to this. I think there's more talent coming through, and we're seeing now what that pipeline kind of looks like with guys who do well at the academy side. They get a taste of it with the Atlanta United two team in the USL Championship. Then they might go back to the academy and be asked to be the man and kind of dominate a little bit before they're brought back into the twos. It's starting to work really nicely. And when you look at the pipeline across a lot of different positions, there's quite a few potential homegrowns in the mix.
Essential for player development. And it's good to see the commitment there. To go back to that, what's the relationship like with Atlanta United when it comes to the youth soccer community and the soccer community overall? But first with the youth, because, you know, we have some issues down here in Houston where you know, there is some divisiveness, for lack of a better word. I want to be very, very upfront and honest. And my understanding and my belief has always been it could be a better relationship, all the oars pulling in the same direction. What's it like in Atlanta?
It's always a challenge, I think, everywhere. I think it's pretty good. I think it's probably better than I thought it might be at the beginning, because you had some very entrenched people and some very entrenched clubs who had dominated the youth scene for a number of years. I think the youth scene as a whole in Atlanta has had a lot of shifts, and I don't know if this is typical around the country or not, with teams leaving the state association, going to the U.S. club organization, creating their own levels of play, you know, separate from U.S. youth. So you've had a lot of that go on alongside Atlanta United coming into it. Maybe that's helped Atlanta United a little bit. Maybe the other clubs have had to deal with their own business a little bit more and haven't had time to kind of push back. There's always those rumblings that happen when a player, you know, leaves a club and goes to the Atlanta United.
Are they
Academy.
Aggressively recruiting players from other teams? Do they want it to organically happen? Do they do things for the youth soccer community in order to extend the olive branch?
I think that last part's the essential one, because, yeah, I mean, you're obviously going to be looking to bring players in from other clubs, because Atlanta United's not working with 5 and 6 and 7 year olds. It's they're at their local clubs. And then as they get to the U12 and maybe 10, 11 years old, they're being looked at potentially coming into the Atlanta United fold. And sometimes they come in later. But Atlanta United's done a pretty good job, and I think it's something they're really looking to get back to now that we get hopefully on the other side of this pandemic at some point, having coaching education sessions, bringing coaches in from clubs to watch how the academy works, helping them with those resources and that understanding, and helping the coaches at the local clubs continue to grow and develop. Because the sense I've always gotten, and this is whether it was Tony Annan, who was the initial academy director who's gone on to the University of South Carolina, or Matt Lowry, who's there now, is they want to empower the local clubs to help with that initial phase of development, the youngest ages, to then bring them into Atlanta United, thank the local clubs, give them that recognition. And Atlanta United, I think, has done a really good job of that. You know, when a player signed to Atlanta United's academy, it's they're a Concord Fire player or an Inter Atlanta player, the various youth clubs. But also, like, Atlanta United needs those clubs to be strong at the local levels for two reasons. I mean, it's the player development side is one, but also the recreational side. And I think, you know, maybe MLS teams miss this sometimes. I think Atlanta's done a pretty good job of trying to be connected to the youth clubs, because those kids who play rec, those kids who are on the lower level classic teams or select teams, they're probably not going to go professional. They're probably not going to go to college, but they're going to be your fans. They're going to be the ones who buy tickets. They're going to be the ones who coach later on. They're going to be the ones who really drive that soccer culture and that community. And Atlanta United needs to be a friend to those portions of the youth game as well.
Yeah, no question. A vehicle of promotion, obviously, that's what your academy and your youth development setup can be. If I go back to that a little bit, isn't it important to partner also with the youth community? In other words, you're not necessarily coming in, maybe you're doing a little bit of an ID camp and you're working with the Concord Fire and you're working together with the coaches as opposed to being up here. Because let's face it, much like Houston, we have incredibly smart, very, very good soccer educators down here, coaches, guys that are in player development that have played in MLS before for other clubs and all over the place. I've been trying to make that point down here. This is important in order to get everybody in, is not say, hey, we're the pro club. And in some cases, those coaches may be better than some of the ones that are on staff. Let's be really honest.
Yeah, it's true. I think Tony Annan did a great job when he got the academy going here in Atlanta, because he had been in that coaching community for so long. He knew everybody. And, you know, we know how this stuff goes. Like, the pro team is the pro team. The youth clubs are the youth clubs. I think here, especially, the youth clubs were working so hard about developing players for the college game, which is a different mindset entirely. You know, I think what Atlanta United's been able to do is find that balance, because they do have to act like a pro team in terms of giving those resources back, those coaching seminars, that kind of stuff that they can kind of, you know, demonstrate what they're doing. But they also have to be able to let the youth clubs be who they are and do their thing. And I think Atlanta's found that balance. It probably helped Tony a lot as he was creating this stuff to have gone through what happened with the Atlanta Silverbacks.
And frankly, you want them to be who they are. You don't want to homogenize them. I think in the end, if you homogenize the youth scene, it's going to be to your detriment in a number of ways, not only when it comes to actually putting people in the seats, but also developing players.
100%. And that's exactly what happened here previously with the Silverbacks and USL and then NASL. When they were in USL, they were involved in creating some mergers with clubs and put their brand on things and created a lot of ill will, I think, in the youth scene. Atlanta United learned from those lessons and have come in to be the pro team and do it on a level that really hasn't been done here, but also to try to lift everybody else up as well alongside and help them be better at what they do.
Pretty incredible because, you know, you could skimp behind the fact that you're drawing 45,000 people a game, you know, and not take serious. And we've seen clubs do that, take the foot off the pedal in certain areas because they are drawing the fans. Well, Jason, thank you as always. Great stuff. It's Jason Longshore, Soccer Down Here podcast. He's also the analyst on Atlanta United Games, 92.9 The Game. Thank you, Jason.
We'll talk soon. Thanks.
So that does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. As always, a big thank you to Andrew Carlson, our producer extraordinaire. You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, at Soccer Matters GD, at Glenn Davis Sock. You can also go over to our Facebook page, Soccer Matters, or if you want to find out a little bit more about the host of the show, it's glenndavissoccer.com. All the likes, all the support, that means a lot to our sponsors. It means a lot in keeping us on the air. And it also means a lot when it comes to the recognition of the game. We're all in this together. So thank you very much for supporting this show. You get the podcast at ESPN975.com in Houston and at HornFM.com in Austin. Until next week, I'm Glenn Davis. Thank you for tuning in. Continue to watch the African Cup of Nations. It's great stuff. Until next week, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.